is seen.
And the unexpected rarely happens. When the unexpected does happen, however, and when it is of sufficiently grave import, the unfit perish. They do not see what is not obvious, and are unable to do the unexpected, are incapable of adjusting their well-grooved lives to other and strange grooves. In short, when they come to the end of their own groove, they die. On the other hand, there are those who make towards survival, the fit individuals, who escape from the rule of the obvious and the expected, and adjust their lives to no matter what strange grooves they may stray into or into which they may be forced. Such an individual was Edith Whittlesey. She was born in a rural district of England, where life proceeds by rule of thumb, and the unexpected is so very unexpected that when it happens it is looked upon as an immorality. She went into service early, and while yet a young woman, by rule of thumb progression, she became a lady's maid. The effect of civilization is to impose human law upon environment until it becomes machine-like in its regularity. The objectionable is eliminated. The inevitable is foreseen. One is not even made wet by the rain nor cold by the frost, while death, instead of stalking about gruesome and accidental, becomes a prearranged pageant, moving along a well-oiled groove to the family vault, where the hinges are kept from rusting and the dust from the air is swept continually away. Such was the environment of Edith Whittlesey. Nothing happened. It could scarcely be called a happening when, at the age of 25, she accompanied her mistress on a bit of travel to the United States. The groove merely changed its direction. It was still the same groove and well-oiled. It was the groove that bridged the Atlantic with uneventfulness, so that the ship was not a ship in the midst of the sea, but a capacious, many-corridored hotel that moved swiftly and placidly, crushing the waves into submission with its colossal bulk until the sea was a millpond, monotonous with quietude. And at the other side, the groove continued on over the land, a well-disposed, respectable groove that supplied hotels at every stopping place and hotels on wheels between the stopping places. In Chicago, while her mistress saw one side of social life, Edith Whittlesey saw another side, and when she left her lady's service and became Edith Nelson, she betrayed, perhaps faintly, her ability to grapple with the unexpected and to master it. Hans Nelson, immigrant, Swede by birth and carpenter by occupation, had in him the Teutonic unrest that drives the race ever westward on its great adventure. He was a large-muscled, stolid sort of man, in whom little imagination was coupled with immense initiative, and who possessed, withal, loyalty and affection as sturdy as his own strength. "When I have worked hard and saved me some money, I will go to Colorado," he had told Edith on the day after their wedding. A year later, they were in Colorado, where Hans Nelson saw his first mining and caught the mining fever himself. His prospecting led him through the Dakotas, Idaho, and eastern Oregon, and on into the mountains of British Columbia. In camp and on trail, Edith Nelson was always with him, sharing his luck, his hardship, and his toil. The short step of the house-reared woman she exchanged for the long stride of the mountaineer. She learned to look upon danger clear-eyed and with understanding, losing forever that panic fear which is bred of ignorance and which afflicts the city-reared, making them as silly horses, so that they await fate in frozen horror, instead of grappling with it, or stampede in blind, self-destroying terror which clutters the way with their crushed carcasses. Edith Nelson met the unexpected at every turn of the trail, and she trained her vision so that she saw in the landscape not the obvious, but the concealed. She, who had never cooked in her life, learned to make bread without the mediation of hops, yeast, or baking powder, and to bake bread, top and bottom, in a frying pan before an open fire. And when the last cup of flour was gone and the last rind of bacon, she was able to rise to the occasion and of moccasins and the softer tanned bits of leather in the outfit to make a grub steak substitute.